So.
Well then, your entities. If we were in UTC, it would be midnight now. And midnight is the spooky hour. And this means that spooky things happen, like mathematics and physics. But as with ghosts, we also have strong personalities here who have no fear of the bad things and shed light into this. Rosa has been doing for many years, or has since many years, got fascination for particle physics, which has been a nightmare for myself. And she will present us in the next 30 minutes why this is not evil at all. A big applause, please, for introduction to particles physics from Rosa.
Hi,
I'm Rosa. I'm 18 and I'm studying physics at TU Graz. And I also visiting mathematics lectures. And I will present you particle physics tonight. Wow. Well, the first question, why particle physics? I want you to tell you a story about this. When I was still younger and could think more or less, then I asked myself, how does the world function? How does it work? I looked at my hand and I thought, when I think or say it should move, it just moves. How can this happen? What's my hand made of at all? What am I made of? What's the world around us made of? And well, say it like this. If you ask questions like this, then in the first moment it's not easy to find an answer to it. And everybody will find this answer on his or her own kind. For me personally, it was particle physics which brought clarity to this question. And the interesting thing about it is, when you study particle physics, you quite fast get to into the. You realize that it's more mainly or a lot of mathematics. There is no particle physics without maths. So in the beginning, this was all really difficult to understand. You get overwhelmed. You have the feeling that you don't want. What if I'm too dumb for it? If I'm not intelligent for all of this? What if I don't understand particle physics because I don't understand mathematics? But at some point, my physics studies started. I also decided to started with mathematics, with analysis 1, and I visited this. And there I had a very good professor. And in a two-hour lecture, he always does a special kind of a pause with us. He makes a pause. We stop with analysis, convergences, etc. And he gets some cookies. And we talk about one specific mathematic topics, which he presents us. And one day, he showed us a video from Hugo Domenini Japan. That's the Nobel Prize winner in peace, if I understand correctly, for in 2022. And that's what he said. I will show you the video now. Also, Hugo Domnil Coppin hat eine Medaille gewonnen für Probleme, die lange ungelöst waren. schlau zu sein, geht nicht nur, es ist vieles, das um.
It is important that everybody finds what he likes in life. I'm very lucky I'm doing a job that I enjoy. My work and my passion are the same thing. So I hope I can show how beautiful math is and how amazing being a mathematician is. I'm currently a professor at the University of Geneva.
Und die Moral der Geschichte ist,
it's the moral story.
It's not always about the thing that we call intelligence. It's more about the own experience and how you kind of grasp the world. That's something that let us, you know, that enables us to ask the questions. This is the thing that advances us. And it's also the thing that makes us understand the world around us. Using math, we can grasp the fundamental concepts of, well, anything. So, why exactly am I telling this to you? Well, you see, particle physics is kinda made of math. And I would like to introduce some of this math to you. And before we do that, I kind of want to ask you, I want to beg you to not give up, to look further, to look beyond, even though there might be something very intimidating, just as the math ahead. So let's start. So let's ask the questions, right? So what makes the world? What the hell is vacuum? This question, a certain someone called Dirac asked themselves. And he came up with this equation that you can see up here. It's momentum, right? So it's mass times velocity. And we're talking about things that move incredibly fast. And he kind of looked at this thing and asked himself the question like, you know, there is this square on the E on the left side. So if we do some math, then we can kind of think about that there is a positive and a negative energy. But that doesn't make sense, no? I mean, vacuum and negative energy, preposterous. So what he did is make up new equations. And you could think that those negative energies are excluded from the new equations. But what he did actually is using this negative energy as an integral part of his new formulas. He just, you know, assumed that vacuum is made up of infinite negative energies, infinite negative charges.
Now,
if you look at the red and the blue diagram of here, we've got the particles, these blobs that should symbolize the negative energy. And the blue particle, that's the real electron. Something we can't perceive. And this is the way he described the vacuum. Now here's the thing. If you have a beam that is incredibly high in energy and you shoot it at a vacuum, then it's possible that this electron, which is surrounded by negative energy, it just, you know, breaks free and flips its charge into positive. And now that it did that, it leaves behind a gap. And this gap has a reason, it has meaning. And he called it a positron. It's the antiparticle of the electron. And this particle that we just generated with the energy can also fall back, and the vacuum is in the same original state. Thus, he described the formation of matter and antimatter. And the cool thing is, these particles, they have unique abilities. They can spin, for instance. And now, let's talk about rotary momentum, or angular momentum. You can't really, you know, imagine this as just rotating objects. An electron is a charged particle, and if it would spin, like actually rotate, then there would be, well, a field generated. And, you know, it's a bit hard to kind of describe this, well, self-spinning or self-rotary, auto-rotary behavior. Actually, at my university, in Atoms and Molecules, we have the same topic. And this picture here, this describes the magnetary quantum numbers. It's something different than what is visible in the experiment. The math behind it is quite complex, though. These are attributes of particles that are not easily grasped. And when I remember back, when I was first listening to this talk, I kind of felt like you probably right now. These two pictures I actually made at this exact day. Nice. But these are important properties of the particles that we will need later to describe further proceedings. The only thing that you should really take home is that elemental particles have something which is like a auto-rotation. Something, you know, it kind of rotates around its own center, but it also kind of doesn't. The angular momentum is a bit weird. The electron, for instance, has a spin of 1/2 and is hence called a fermion. Fermions actually follow the Pauli principle. That means that one single fermion cannot have the same spin of another one in the same quantum state. Actually, two quantum particles following the Pauli principle cannot have the same quantum state. Next, let's talk about quarks. You probably have heard about protons and neutrons, but these are not elemental particles. They're smaller units of protons and neutrons. You can't split them. There's no fission. But they're smaller elemental particles called quarks. So the person that actually made up the name quarks named them after the German word Quark, which is something of a, well, more fermented kind of yogurt. So a proton, for instance, is two up and one down quarks. And a neutron would be two down and one up. An up quark has the charge 2/3 and a down and an up of 1/3. So with a proton you get one, and with a neutron you get zero.
When particles have an integer spin, they are called bosons. These bosons, they are interesting because they can have the same quantum state. They don't underlay the Pauli principle. That's interesting when we look at lasers, for instance. But lasers alone would not be possible if bosons wouldn't have this property. And further bosons are, for instance, gluons. You can see them up here. These are orange connectors between the quarks. They hold the quarks together so they don't fall apart. And then we have a very special particle. It's the Higgs particle. And I want to tell you a story about this. 4th July 2012 was a Wednesday. Newspapers in Germany said that around a 250,000 of the people talk as need support, and despite that they work. At this day, there was also happening the various other things, and there was the national holidays. Yet each year, on 4th of July, the USA celebrate their Independence Day. That's about it. But on this seemingly normal 4th of July, we discovered a new world, a world inside our world. On this date, the following was announced, something that belonged to the deepest deepest discoveries of our world. In a subterranean plant in Switzerland and France, they were searching for something which has been searched for since 50 years, the Higgs particle. The Higgs particle is very special. We only have mass because of the Higgs particle. The Higgs particle is a particle which gives things a mass. We say it, we live in a Higgs field. What does it mean? Each particle which has a mass is inside this Higgs field and is kept back, like in a pool, for instance, in a swimming pool. So if you swim through water, you are held back. We can think about it the same way with particles that have mass. Particles with a lot of mass, they interact strongly with the Higgs field, so they are slower. And particles without the mass, they can move freely. For instance, something like photons. And something which is very interesting about it is mass weren't always there. At the beginning of the universe, there was nothing, not a such thing as mass. It only got created some instance after the creation of the universe. So now the question is, this is the standard model of particle physics. It's a bunch of particles, of part of which we looked at now. We see the up quark, which we see in protons and neutrons. We also see the down quark. We have the charm and the strange quark, top and bottom quarks. These are similar to the other quarks. We also have things like leptons that we talked about, like an electron, for instance. We also have neutrinos, which are even smaller particles, which also have to do with mass. We have muons and the tauons, which are heavier particles of electrons. And then there's also the Higgs boson, which we talked about. This is an entire zoo of particles. So the question arises, that's strange. Why exactly these particles? Why not more? Why not less? Did we find all of them? Have we? Yeah, that's a question which concerns me a lot, or concerns physicists a lot. And that's also why I plan to go into particle physics and do research in this topic. And I know that particle physics can be really strange at points, but I want to animate you to think about such things. How can it be that our world, which is constructed of such things, which consists of such things, how can this be? Maybe we just have to do more research or more thinking about it. And yeah, that was my talk about particle physics. Thank you very much.
Ja, vielen, vielen Dank.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm a bit smarter now than before the talk, but if you also have questions, now is the time.
Und dann klettere ich zu euch durch. Da drüben ist eine. Haben wir eine?
So, there is a question here in the room, which I will try to find now.
Also, meine Frage wäre.
Hello, my question is, can it be shown experimentally, these things, and if yes, how? Or is it more a thing of there were calculation that things have to be like that, and if not, it would not fix? Well, the thing is, first you usually have theories and calculation, and then it's verified experimentally. Everything that I talked about, gluons, quarks, etc., they were all verified experimentally. For instance, in a particle accelerator at CERN, they crashed two protons, and then so-called jets are produced, which have different deviations. And based on the angles, for instance, of this deviation, we can conclude to the number of gluons which are inside it.
Next question. How do you know that there is no other particles, no? I mean, we also did a lot of research to kind of get to the Higgs boson. So, can we really say that's it? Well, you know, if it comes to particle physics, we usually start with the theories, like, so is there an issue with some of the formulas, some of the theories, just like dark matter right now. And then we basically try to resolve these things, looking for gaps, trying to, you know, kind of fix them, building new, larger facilities, like a new collider that's, well, probably under construction in the next few years, And, you know, we can't really say that's it, right? But usually it actually starts from the theory. Next, and more questions. There.
Du hast jetzt gesagt, dass sich Protonen.
So, you just said that protons and neutrons cannot fission. So, but they're made out of quarks. So why? And that's okay. So that's basically because of those gluons, the glue particles that kind of hold the quarks together, kind of connect them. And these are not separable. But we would have to dive into, well, deeper into the theories now. So imagine if we put a lot, and I mean a lot of energy into that, we can kind of create a quark gluon plasm. But we can't really, you know, separate them and say, this is an up quark. So, at the beginning you said that Dirac translated vacuum into negative energy. And second question, is that still up to date? And second question is, so is there, when does the vacuum start? So the ideal vacuum is basically no particles. That's it. Just a volume without. And the thing is, something like negative energy we can't really prove because it doesn't really exist in our world. It's more something that comes from theory and lives inside the equations. And you kind of start from there building a concept to try and grasp it and understand whatever's going on. You can also describe positrons as particles that actually can travel back in time. It's a different interpretation, really. And at this point, you really have to talk about interpretations of this kind of concept to get more, well, points of view. There's another question coming up. Thanks for the lovely talk. Actually, new things for me. You said, when you talked about the Higgs boson, you actually said that matter kind of existed after a certain point. Can you elaborate on that, please? Okay, so now we're actually going into a very abstract mathematical theorem. You can kind of imagine it the way. Okay, so this whole thing has a lot in common with symmetry, right? So it's all about symmetry. And at the start, at the beginning of the universe, you assume that everything was symmetrical. So assuming that mass, if mass is symmetrical, imagine the Higgs field being symmetrical. At this point, when the symmetry is there, there's no mass. Only when breaking this symmetry, mass can spring into existence. So, in our theory, for a very short time, probably infinitesimally short, there's no mass. So we kind of think about a stable state, a metastable state, that kind of broke and gave rise to mass. Any more questions? Up here, the front. So how long do you study physics? Or have you been studying physics at this point? And does everything make sense to you? All right, so I'm in first semester. I just started my career, and I have to tell you, the whole math behind it, I'm about to wrap my head around, but I'm still far from grasping it. But I am well on track to kind of get a better understanding of the whole theorem behind it. But I actually have to tell you, I'm not at a point where I'm confident and where I'm satisfied with the understanding that I have. More questions? No. Well, give it up for Rosa.
And there is still a signal angel question. I wanted to do the outro already here. From the various competing theories, do you have a favorite? Which one is the best? Like the supersymmetry, etc. I haven't seen who asked this question. Which theories do you think, please? We have, for instance, loop quantum supersymmetries, one of the M theories, etc. Which one do you like best? Well, I'm not a big fan of the string theories and these super theories. But it's probably not good that I say this right now, because I'm just starting my studies. But I like things which don't happen in 11 dimensions. That would be my my wish. But if theory says we are actually in a world of 11 dimensions, then I have to accept it. But of course, I will probably first do research within our three dimensions. And it seems now that there are no more questions. So thank you to Rosa, and thanks to you for listening to the English translation.